Before we get to today's podcast, I want to share something with you I thought you might dig. Every morning, Stephen A. and Max Kellerman debate the hottest stories of the day as only they can on First Take. Weekdays from 1 to 3, the debates expand further as Jason Fitz brings First Take, your take, to ESPN Radio. Agree? Disagree? This show is about your thoughts and your reactions. Be a part of the discussion. It's First Take, your take, with Jason Fitz on ESPN Radio and ESPN. Download and subscribe to First Take, your take, and the right time wherever you get your podcasts. 2020 is going to be the year you get it together, right? Join that gym, start that diet. Nah. But how about getting out of that job and into a career? A career in information technology. There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an information technology professional in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just a few times a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free computer evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe that you are a hater. On this episode, we got Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports, buddies and executive producer on Killer Inside, the documentary on Aaron Hernandez you can find on Netflix. We're going to talk to him about that. We'll also talk about Eli Manning retiring, but first... Gabe, you see Zion last night?
I did. And what I saw of him was very brief because he was constantly on the sidelines pulling on and off warm-up gear.
Yes, that did happen. Not going to lie. Saw the first half live. I saw the relevant portion of the second half on DVR.
That's my guy right
there. Got a little late. Not going to lie. Had a hard time making it all the way to the end. The dude scored 22 points in 18 minutes, and he took 11 shots. 11 field goal attempts, 22 points in 18 minutes. The dude went 4-for-4 from three. He did not even dunk in this game and scored 22 points in 18 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, we can cancel Christmas. I am officially all in. And you know me well enough, guys. I talked about this before. I don't see the need. I ain't got to be first. You know what I'm saying? I would rather be skeptical and then you win me over and then streets is like, yo, Bomani say it's cool. I know he takes his time with these things. I'm not about being rash. I'm judicious with mine. I'm in. I'm all the way in. And I'm not going to lie. It's a lot easier for me to be all the way in and be all the way in like this when he's not going to Duke.
You see that jump shot too?
Dude, if there's going to be a jumper here, it's over. This isn't a dude I don't think that's going to have a long career, right? I don't think he's going to play for 20 years. I think he's probably going to play for something like 8 or 9 just because the physics of his body are so tricky. But if there is a jump shot, if he has a jumper that you have to respect and even just a little bit of handle, if he does that, what in the world is this league going to do? What can you do? Like when he got to college, it was just like, okay, well, let's see what kind of defender he is, right? Because that was a fair question to ask. What kind of defender is he? You know what kind of defender he is? He's the kind of defender that's 6'8", 275 with absurdly long arms and all the hops. Somehow guys like that find a way to play defense. So, okay, we got that one. He can score so many points without having the ball. Like, you can't score without having the ball. You know what I mean? But I like dominating the ball. Like, you don't have to give him the ball, give it to him on the wing, he back somebody down and go into ISO. No, he can just be in the right place at the right time. It's here, guys. It is here. I don't know how long it's going to go. If he can play, like, real minutes with the Pelicans, they can possibly make the playoffs? Right? There's a chance that they could get to the playoffs. And if they don't get to the playoffs this year, they got a real team for next year. They got all these dudes and all these picks, and they got that guy? I'm here. This is going to be fun. I got a question, though, man. Mark Jackson spent that whole time on the broadcast. I don't know if you heard that game. Mark Jackson on there just like, yo, he has got to get in better shape. Yeah, he got to get in better shape. He ain't played ball all year. What y'all want? Dude ain't played ball and had surgery.
Just let the man play. Yeah. I mean, we let Draymond, like, spend the first half of the season playing his way into shape, don't we?
Right. Like, what kind of, I just don't know what kind of shape anybody thought that he was going to be in. He's got to get in better shape. Why? So he can score 28 points in 18 minutes? He scored 22 points in 18 minutes.
Did you notice anything different about his gait or the way he was, like, jumping? I know they spent a lot of time in his rehab trying to, like, retrain him to do those things. Did you notice anything different?
I didn't notice anything in particular, but, I mean, and I don't know the particulars of his rehab, but I really feel like they've made too much of this. Like, when I read that story, I asked people on Twitter, and I was just like, is this a big deal? Because I had knee surgery when I was 15, and one of the things that we did after the surgery was to teach you how to walk again. Part of teaching you how to walk again is you do nerve damage in surgery, so you actually do kind of have to learn to walk again. But in that process, they were like, yeah, here's how we want you to point your toe when you walk. Like, I don't think that those things were nearly the big deal that people made them out to be. Like, I think they happen a lot more than folks realize, but associated with this story, it then came out. Because, look, here's my thing, man. Even though, like, the meniscus injury isn't one that's necessarily going to end your whole situation. But let's say that a meniscus tear made him 75% as athletic as he was before. How athletic is that? Right? Like, what's 75% of infinity? Yeah. You see what I mean? Like, that's what we got here. No. I'm here for it. And didn't they take the lead before he went back on the bench? If he's just going to play some more than minutes, it should have been the last ones. Get him out there and got me in crunch time.
Do you have any comps that you've been able to come up with as far as, like, what he'll turn out to be aside from the obvious, like, Charles Barkley? I did think it was funny. Alvin Gentry compared him to Draymond Green. Mentioned his jumper earlier because I was laughing. There's, like, a meme that's been doing the rounds over the last couple of years with Draymond when he shoots a three of wearing a backpack.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
Yes.
And I immediately thought of that when I saw Zion shooting threes because, I mean, he's got some lift, right? Yeah. Crazy out of this world lift. When he shoots a jump shot, he doesn't get very high off the ground. So it looks like he's carrying a backpack too.
So defensively, I think a Draymond Green comparison makes sense. Like, I can see it, like undersized by way of height, but with that wingspan, you know, like I can see the similarities with them on the defensive end. Offensively, like, those of us who are around for this Sean Kemp thing, we kind of see this in Zion, except two things. One, he's so much more athletic than Sean Kemp. And two, go back and look at the numbers at Sean Kemp. Like, the talent didn't necessarily turn into production in the way that you might have remembered it happening with Sean Kemp. Barkley, so the thing with Barkley is not as tall as Zion was. Barkley's closer to like 6'5". Barkley was a better ball handler. Like, Barkley's some real end-to-end, hold the ball himself sort of thing. But the other thing about Barkley, too, was for a scorer as good as he was, he didn't require high usage rate. Incredibly efficient scorer, which I think is going to be part of what it is with Zion. But otherwise, heard Dan say, I forget who gave this quote about Zion, and he's like, yo, man, he's not quick for a big guy, he's quick for a quick guy. They made one of these. They might make a second one at some point, but I think it's safe to say that he is unquestionably a better athlete than LeBron James was at this same age. Let's let that soak in. You got it. All right, guys. Eli Manning has retired. Eli Manning was quarterback of New York Giants, two-time Super Bowl champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP. He has retired. I have to tell you something. I have noticed in everything that I've read about Eli Manning and in anybody that I've talked to about Eli Manning who kind of knows him, people really, really like this guy. Right, right, like they do. They really, really, really like this guy. And being like matters on some things. And one of those things is people talking about whether or not you should get into the Hall of Fame. Because in the end, nothing about the world really changes based on whether you want to get into the Hall of Fame. If you just want somebody to be in the Hall of Fame, you just put them in the Hall of Fame. And if you don't want somebody to be in the Hall of Fame, then you keep that person out of the Hall of Fame. Like, that's just kind of how it goes. So, like, you know, some people are just overwhelmingly good and you got to do it. But for them cats on the fringe, it just kind of gets to be like, yeah, if they like you, they'll put you in. If they don't, they don't. That's kind of what it is, right? And Eli Manning gives us a fascinating case, but I'm going to give you a comparison to make you think a little bit more about this. Now, one thing I'm trying to avoid doing, but people are making it impossible because they talk so much about Eli's Hall of Fame case. One thing I do want to try to avoid doing is I don't really want to, like, have to shit on the man when he retired. Like, I think this is a time to talk about what is good about Eli Manning. And what is good about Eli Manning is that Eli Manning is, what if Derek Jeter was a Herb? Like, yeah, I'm not saying he's like as good as Derek Jeter or anything like that. No. But the magic trick with Derek Jeter was avoiding any form of controversy that anybody could throw out there. Derek Jeter was great at taking all the blows that came and just kind of shrugging them off and keeping it moving. And that's the biggest thing about Eli Manning. That is what he provided also. That's the best thing about him, really, is how well he managed being the face of a New York franchise. He handled it brilliantly. Brilliantly, right? Great for the team. Great for, like, the team as a macro. Great for the team as a micro. Great for all those people. He did that. He just a little bit of a Herb, you know, but that's cool. It's like, what if Derek Jeter was a Herb? And I totally understand why it is that Giants fans love that dude. Like, if he is your guy, I get why you have this sentimental attachment to him. And that, for me, is why he's a Giants Ring of Honor guy. Maybe like a Giants Hall of Famer. But it's all particular to the Giants. And if everything I say about you is particular to your own team, like, for me, that doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. But no, this is like... like, this is what being rich really is. You know what I'm saying? Kind of, that's what you can talk about it. Like, yo, I got the real love as opposed to this conditional stuff. Nah, man, that's there. Those two Super Bowls, y'all won those. Good for y'all. He was the guy that was quarterback when y'all did that. Good for him. Good for y'all. Everything. I appreciate the love that they have for each other. And that's what it should be. But I don't think Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. You know who I do think is a Hall of Famer? Tiki Barber. Tiki Barber is a Hall of Famer. You go back and look at them Tiki Barber stats. Look at what he put up and the way it went as he got older. Yeah, like, Tiki Barber was producing at the end of his career in a way that you rarely see a running back produce. Like, I think that some people will go back and look at some numbers on Tiki Barber and be legitimately stunned by how good he was. Because you'll think about him in terms of the fumbles and all of that stuff. Tiki Barber closed out his career. Listen to this. 1387, 1216, 1518, 1860, 1662. Those are his last five totals in rushing, right? Tiki Barber at age 30 and age 31 averaged over 5 yards per carry. That is incredible stuff. Led the league in yards from scrimmage twice, by the way. Problem is, people don't like that dude. They don't like that dude a little bit. They don't like that dude a lot. They don't like that dude at all. At all. Not even a bit. And then he bucked shots at Eli right after he rolled out, and then the Giants won the Super Bowl with Eli there. But that dude right there is a Hall of Famer. Ain't nobody about to get in that room and make that case of that dude being a Hall of Famer. Nobody. Nobody's going to do it. They don't like that dude. He also, for what it's worth, doesn't have the Super Bowl, right? He played in a Super Bowl, but he doesn't have the Super Bowl championship. Eli's got that, man. Eli's got them two rings, and Eli has got the fact that people like him. And those things will probably get him into the Hall of Fame. But the truth is, those things didn't make him a better player than he was. I understand that that fact doesn't matter when it comes down to voting as well as some variety of popularity contests. I get that all day long. But I'm telling you, man, we can say nice things about Eli Manning without it being an insult that we don't say the ultimate nice things, right? There's levels to niceness. And he has earned the niceness to say there are very few people who have been the face of any franchise, for 16 years in the way that Eli Manning has, who have handled it as well as Eli Manning did, who saw the team reach such heights as they did while Eli Manning was there. Good for him. Good for the Giants. Congratulations on a great career. I don't want to have to say but about that stuff. So I just need y'all to shut up. Thanks. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk to Dan Wetzel. But first, it's a new year, the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, joining us now from Yahoo Sports, you guys know one of my favorites, and executive producer of, Daniel, you have to tell me what the title, because I've just been calling it the Aaron Hernandez documentary, but I know it has a name.
Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez.
Dan Wetzel, who appeared in the documentary and also was an executive producer. And this is what struck me, like when I saw you were in it and then I saw your name on the credits, I was like, okay, cool, I can ride out with this. But it's interesting that I felt like when you were covering the trial from Yahoo, I felt like, wow, Dan is writing this incredible stuff and people aren't really paying attention. But then it's been put in documentary form by a couple of people. And now we're saying, oh, now people are interested in seeing what this story is.
It had a pretty good audience at the time when I'd cover it, which is why we kept covering it. People are interested in true crime in the country. Always have been. So there was a big audience. But I think the thing about a documentary, a visual medium, which is what the whole time we thought this is perfect for television, is it's different when you can hear the jailhouse calls or you can see the look on Aaron Hernandez's face when Robert Kraft walks into the courtroom, or, you know, you see the surveillance videos of him carrying a gun in his house or outside the club or whatever it is. It just changes the dynamic of it. There are certain stories which are better written than visual, and there's certain ones that are better visual than written. And I think this one's pretty good on both, but I think it's just very, very powerful when you can see it with your own eyes.
Yeah, I think another part, at least for me, and this is, you know, him playing for the Patriots, those dudes are so largely like nameless, faceless, and anonymous. We don't hear that much from him. It dawned on me as I was watching that, I don't think I've ever heard this dude talk before.
He said very little in the locker rooms, and it was always just football stuff. Yeah, people are like, did you ever talk to Aaron Hernandez, of all things? And I said, well, kind of. But, you know, it was like, what were you thinking on that pass route? Yeah, he kept a low profile. He was hard to miss on the field. I thought also, like, the Patriots have had so many guys come through there, it's easy to forget. And they never won a Super Bowl with Hernandez. But when you watch the video of him playing, whether it's high school, college, or pro, you see how good this guy was. He was a big-time player. And obviously, he only played 3 years. His third year wasn't particularly great for almost understandable reasons, considering the stress he was under. But all anyone thinks about is Gronk. But, man, Hernandez for a little while there was every bit as likely to become Gronk as Gronk was.
Now, is there anything that you learned in the process of doing the documentary that you had not seen while you were covering the trial? Because I know for me, the family stuff was illuminating, particularly the relationship he had with his cousin.
I knew about the cousin's relationship because she was, you know, a real impediment in the investigation. I mean, she aided in the cover-up of both murders. She hid the murder car and the murder weapon in the double homicide in Boston. And then the Odin Lloyd case, she tried to help Ernest Wallace and Carlos Ortiz get away. She drove Ernest Wallace all the way to Atlanta and then put him on a bus to Miami. So I knew about that. What I think is what made the documentary is the jailhouse calls. Once those became public, you're never getting that in an interview, right? Like, this is raw stuff. You can really hear the dysfunction in the relationship with his mother, the love between he and Tanya Singleton, his cousin, his different moods, his interactions with Shayana Jenkins. He has like almost a different tone of voice in each call. Like, he's somebody different to everybody. I thought that was the stuff that there was no way to know until you're actually hearing that stuff and hearing his voice again. Like, nobody had talked to him. So who knew what he even sounded like? Well, now you get to hear his voice and not in polished manner, but in a real, authentic one.
And we also heard him, he wished this whole thing away, right? Like, he just seemed to, in this whole way, just be like, yeah, I'll be all right. I'll be all right, which seems impossible to do while, you know, you're in those jails.
Yeah, you know, through this job, I know, and just anything, but I knew a lot of people that have been in prison or in prison, and it's almost like they have to have that bizarre reality of, like, I'm getting out, you know, or my appeal's going to go through. It's like, if they lose that hope, I think prison officials, that's when they get really worried about them, because you just need to hang on to something no matter how ridiculous. I've heard from prisoners, you know, I wrote this letter to Trump, he's going to pardon me, you know, like, you know, that Donald Trump didn't see your letter, man, but you know, you know, you get it, right? I mean, you get it. So I think he just lived a very, very compartmentalized life. Nobody really knew the full guy, I don't think. His suicide stunned the people who were talking to him the night before, or had spent, I mean, his legal team had spent months with him almost every single day, either preparing or then the trial for the second trial, the double homicide. And they might have known him better than anybody in his life. And Shayana, too, and his brother, everyone. And they are all so stunned that he committed suicide that first they didn't believe it. So I don't know if you can ever really know this guy.
Now, for you guys in setting up this documentary, what was the thought process about the way that you wanted to lay this out and kind of what the thesis was that you wanted to make clear to the viewer?
I think we had a couple overarching things we really wanted to do. One was to try to honor the victims and not make the victims just a name. I always find that very frustrating, and I get there's time constraints on shows and articles and things like that, but Odin Lloyd was a real guy, and Saphira Furtado and Daniel De Abreu and their families and the heart and the just the wrecking ball that occurred because of Aaron Hernandez. And so that was one theme we wanted to make sure we tried to do. We wanted to lay out as many of the possibilities of why. We could tell what happened, but the interest here is why. Why is a guy who seemingly has everything, you know, act in this manner, live this double life? But we didn't have an answer. And I don't think anyone ever will. The only criticisms of this I've ever really just, I don't really get bothered, but I don't know what to say, is like, well, you didn't come to a conclusion. You didn't figure it out. No one's going to figure it out. Like, if you're all in and say it's CTE, or it's his relationship with his mother, or it's his sexuality, or it's an interest in guns, or whatever you want to come up with, I just don't think that's fair to the other aspects. I think this is a perfect cocktail, and we don't know why this happened. So we definitely wanted to do that. And then, I'm trying to think of the third one. There was a third one. I'll try to remember it. But it was try to just lay it all out there, throw everything in, and be fair to as many people as we could be, everyone really in the documentary.
Yeah. What have you thought about people? Because I've seen people who felt as though the documentary tried to, rather than explain.
Oh, this is the
excuse.
Third one. Yeah. Excuse. Yeah. We didn't want to excuse. There you go. Thank you. We wanted to explain. And it's a very fine line. Right. It's a very fine line. Aaron Hernandez made these decisions. Aaron Hernandez ended lives, ruined lives of people close to him and people he didn't even know. And so everything is his thing. But the interest is why. So let's try to explain the circumstances around him without saying, oh, this poor guy. And I think most people got that. Obviously, some people just want to say, oh, he's just a scumbag killer. Who cares? All right. Then don't watch. But I have no sympathy for Aaron Hernandez at all, not know him and knowing those families, but it doesn't mean he's not a fascinating story and you want to know why this happened as much as what.
Yeah, like I wound up myself in a tricky situation when it comes to like sympathy on stuff like this, because I have no sympathy for him on the fact that he killed those people, because everybody's got a story. Like I used to say this about Terrell Owens, or Terrell Owens had always explained to people, nobody knows what I went through when he would, right. You know, and of course, completely different human being than Aaron Hernandez. I don't want that to get confused. But I always say, dude, you don't understand, though, man. Everybody has a story, right? Like, everybody's got something that pushes them and takes them to the place where they are. And that's my thing with Hernandez, was just kind of like, okay, I hear this story, and I'm like, damn, I had it a little bit easier than this guy had coming here. That doesn't mean it's okay to kill people, right? Like, there's room to talk about those two things.
Right. There's a long gap where he could have gotten help. And everybody else gets help, pretty much. There's a lot of things he could have done. It's a perfect cocktail that created this horrible story. So we certainly had no intention of ever excusing his behavior, and I don't think we did. And we tried to get a lot of different voices in there. And part of that is reminding the people, like, we would keep going back to it. Like, you know, I thought Odin Lloyd's friend and teammate, Mike Massey, is just, you know,
oh,
really fascinating guy. deep thinker, right? You wouldn't expect a semi-pro football player to be such a deep thinker, but man, you go back to him and go back to Ursula Ward and those people and his sisters and stuff and be like, all right, if you start to feel a little sympathy, let's remember what got lost here. This guy didn't do anything wrong.
Yo, you saying that about the teammate of the semi-pro team, my exact thought when I was watching this was like, yo, this dude's a philosopher. Like, everything he said is so insightful and so dead on.
Man, he goes, Hernandez wasn't rich. Odin was rich. And he's right, because Hernandez had the house, right? He had the fame. He had all the stuff. But it's clear he wasn't happy with any of it. He wasn't happy with himself. He couldn't be himself. He had family problems. He was tortured inside and wasn't happy at all. And Odin Lloyd did not have a big house and didn't have all this money, and nobody knew who he was. But he was, if you listen to his friends, he was the guy everyone loved. He'd show up at the barbecue. Everyone liked him. He rolled great blunts. Like, that's what a great thing to be known as, right? The guy, hey, Odin's here, right? We're going to get some good blunts. You know, like, he was this happy-go-lucky dude. He grew up in a crime-ridden area of Dorchester in Boston. And he skated kind of through it, right in the middle. Massey said the same thing. We never expected him to be on either side of the gun. He just, you know, gangs, whatever. He wasn't in them. And everyone kind of liked him. And now he's 27. And he's dating Shania Jenkins, this woman he met while he's on a construction job down in Connecticut. She's up in Boston going to law school at New England College of Law.
Yeah, now that's Shania's sister. Oh, no, that's right. It's Shania and Shayana. This is Shania. My fault.
Shania, yeah. And he seems to have this, like, really bright future. And he's got this, like, great girlfriend. She's going to be a lawyer. And, like, everything's going great. And, yeah, he was rich. And Hernandez and his house was not. And man, yeah, it's deep. He's a deep thinker.
Well, the other thing that got me when we were talking about, you know, playing on the team with Lloyd, and I guess this is something I should have known, but I hadn't thought about, but I was like, yo, these dudes are paying money to play football, and they took it seriously. Like, they showed up at their funeral in those jerseys like you would expect servicemen to.
The Boston Bandits, I did not know much about the semi-pro football. I mean, there's more people on the field than watching the stands. They love the game. That's playing for the love of the game right there.
Yeah, I always say about football, like, you know the thing about football and how dangerous it is. There ain't nobody out here playing this for free, right? And then I looked up. No, there are people paying money to do it.
You can find basketball getting played all over. There's tennis courts. There's golf courses. Right? Not a lot of just guys going down the park to see if anyone wants to play some tackle football. Not after you're about 12 years old.
Yeah, now I got my pads on under my clothes. We can play right after work, baby. That's not how this goes. And these dudes, like I say, these dudes were out there, and you were right in the way they talked about Lloyd. They seemed so hurt by just the very idea that somebody would do this to him. And I thought that was a good part about this, as you mentioned, the discussion of the victims. And it's easier to get discussion of Lloyd, obviously, than it was the other two gentlemen. But with Lloyd, I really felt like I came away from it, like, kind of sort of knowing who this dude was.
Yeah. And the other two, they were younger, but, you know, one was a police officer, Cape Verde, and their families were more private. But these people were amazing. They were immigrants. All come to Boston, you know, it's like chain migration. You can bring, you know, bring your cousin, bring your brother. They had started businesses during this trial. I mean, it's so heart-wrenching. They're such good people. They're down in the break room, like, trying to run their businesses. Super stressful. We got to be up here for my brother. I mean, this trial takes 6-7 weeks or something in Boston. It costs $50 to park in downtown Boston, and I got to get back. My kid's getting out of school, and just the shifts they would run it in. I mean, these are just everything you want out of this country. And their brothers were going to join all that up. They're working as janitors at night, cleaning offices. And they go out on a Sunday night. That was the only night they had off, was Sunday nights. And they go out on a Sunday night and hang out, and Aaron Hernandez happens, you know, and it's just such a sad, sad deal.
And it's not like Hernandez was some, like, master scoundrel, like, super, you know, criminal expert or anything like that. These just all seem to be ridiculous things of impulse that on various levels he managed to get away with. Like, the idea that he shot those two guys at the club and then took the car down to Connecticut and parked it, and then boom, he had gotten away with that. Somehow he magically beat that trial with the dude that he shot in the face, who got on the stand and said, he shot me in the face. He gets away with that one, but it's kind of hard to get away with it when you come to your own house and you own your own security cameras with your gun and everything else. That's the dumbest crime anybody's ever committed.
Yeah, the evidence is so overwhelming in that. I mean, you have him picking a guy up. Yeah, I mean, just consider this, right? If Odin Lloyd lives in an area where somebody could get murdered. Okay, there's murders in that area of Boston. He picks them up in the dangerous area, drives them to the safe area, and then kills them. So the cops in North Attleboro, like, this is the crime of the century. They don't have murders. So they're going to comb through every bit of evidence, you know, all of that. In this big city, maybe they're not. Right by your house, you don't erase your own security video. You try. He's wearing these Jordan 11s, like these very exclusive shoes that just nobody has, size 13s. And he has the shoe. He has a box with the shoes. The shoes aren't there, but there was a box they took a picture of. So he happens to have this very exclusive shoe that also happens to be the footprint. He returns the rental car with the gun shell in it. Doesn't even clean out the rental car. They did scrub down the car in the first one. It just was overwhelming disaster for that. That case is so bad. But here's the thing, and this is the one thing I think we didn't do a good enough job on, because everyone wants to know why he killed Odin Lloyd, right? Number one thing. And there's all these theories, and the prosecutors are like, well, he all of a sudden got angry with him, or did Odin know something about his life or sexuality? In the we mention it, and Baez mentioned it, and I mentioned it, but in that spring of 2013, he thinks he's going to get murdered by Alexander Bradley. He's getting blamed for the shooting of Alexander Bradley, the guy shot in the eye. Alexander Bradley says on stand, Aaron shot me. Maybe it was another guy, but whatever. He's sending Aaron text messages. I'm going to kill you. I've got guns. I'm going to find you. All this stuff. Aaron takes Shayana and the baby. They go to California. That's when he gets that tattoo they mentioned in there. It's like a Hermosa Beach tattoo parlor. Gets this, you know, God forgives tattoo. He comes back, and he's basically got about a month until Patriots training camp. And he's worried that he's got an armored car. He's got these two bodyguards, basically. He's loaded up with guns. He's got a flop house. He's got a camera system so you can see anybody coming. He's smoking, you know, marijuana with PCP in it, apparently, like nonstop. Like, he's basically living like, next time I roll up on a stop sign, Bradley's going to roll up next to me and shoot me, right? You can't apply rational decision-making to someone, I don't think, in that circumstance, right? Like, just imagine thinking you're getting hunted and there's nothing you can do. So why did he kill Odin Lloyd? I don't know. He's under extreme pressure and paranoia to the point where, does he think Odin might tell about the apartment? Does he think Odin's going to turn? Like, who knows? But the problem with the first trial, the Odin Lloyd murder, is the government could not bring any of that information in. So they had to come up with a story. I think the most obvious story is this guy thought he's about to get murdered and he's just acting just crazy. That seems plausible to me. You can tell me what you think. But they couldn't do that. So they had to concoct this other theory that really doesn't make much sense. Like, all of a sudden he got mad at Odin, or, you know, or people saying, oh, I just think anything Aaron did is under the idea of this guy was under just enormous pressure of thinking he's about to get killed.
That was the part I hadn't thought about so much going in, was that, oh yeah, after you shoot somebody in the face and that person lives and then tells you, hey, I know you shot me in the face. I mean, obviously, you know, I know that you shot me in the face.
Yeah.
Yo, you can't walk safe after that.
Not when, and it's Alexander Bradley.
Yes.
You saw the video of him. He gets shot in the groin. He just walks up to the bar and just shoots 11 times into a bar. Like, this guy will kill you. 100%. Aaron knew this guy would kill him. It wasn't like, ah, that guy, whatever, or he's going to come by and we're getting a fist fight. No. Like, he's saying, I'm going to kill you? You think so? I think that clouds everything. So part of it's like, why did he do so many stupid things? He wasn't thinking straight.
In all your reporting and research and everything else, the Patriots are an interesting actor in this one, because I'm of the belief, I'm not sure how much these teams are actually supposed to know about guys. Like, I don't expect my employer to know everything that I'm doing in my life and to be keeping tabs on me. And it's kind of crazy we expect football teams to do this. But it seems like the players on the team seem to have an idea, like, hey, something ain't right with this dude. But, like, I don't know what a team's supposed to do under those circumstances.
Yeah, I think you got to be fair on this. And I've gotten some criticism, like, it's more Florida or Patriots fault. I mean, maybe a little more college because they're around. But first off, he was very good at hiding his life, you know, in all aspects of it. Like, you just didn't know. And so, like, one of his high school friends says, you know, I was a little worried of what he was doing, but had it ever hurt him in the past? Not really. And I think you might sit there and go, hey, Hernandez is a little wild, man. I'm not going to hang out. I don't want to go to the club with him. Or, you know what? he's a guy, if all of a sudden I heard he got a DUI or there was a bar fight or whatever the normal things every day we hear, you know, this member of the Minnesota Vikings arrested for this or something, like, you might think that. It's not fair to apply the hindsight where you're like, you know what, I think Hernandez might be a triple murderer. You know, I think Hernandez is plotting an execution-style murder of his fiance's sister's boyfriend, or he just will roll up on a guy in Boston and shoot up a car. Like, those are, the scale of this is so off the charts that I don't think it's fair to sit there and say, oh, the Patriots should have known that this was coming, because he had never exhibited that. How would they know? He had no guns registered to him. I mean, like, if you ran a police check, he had never been arrested. He didn't have guns registered to him. He didn't, you know, he looked like a guy with a fiance and a baby living in a big house, and maybe he went to the clubs a little bit, but you know, he's 23. Like, what? I don't think that's not against the law. So I don't think it's quite fair to be like, they could have stopped this or they should have known. You know, maybe they could have done more. Yeah, but the scale of this is too big.
Yeah, and one of the tragedies of this, he's pointing to, like, regardless of the sympathy you have for him, it is wild to me to think that he was 23, right? Like, I guess I'm old enough now to appreciate how old 23 isn't.
Yeah. 20 when he entered the NFL, youngest player in the league. 17 when he went to college. That, I think all of those, you know, look, would that have changed if he had been a little, yeah, I don't know. But there's just so many things when you look at it. It's like a perfect cocktail of bad things happening that created this guy. I don't know what one thing, but he was very, very young. Hard to, when you're 20 on an NFL team, you know, Tom Brady, now it's 10, you know, Tom Brady's 34 at that time or something like that. You know, I mean, there's guys 28. They got kids. It's just a different lifestyle, all of that. And he only played 3 years in the NFL, 3 years. I think he played 88 football games counting high school. That was it.
Man, because one thing that I had thought about was, and I'd ask this question, how much different, like, because you can look at that and see perhaps some different inflection points, right? Like, what if his father doesn't die, for example? You know, right. You got all these things. And one of them I thought was, what if he didn't get drafted close to home? Like, in a much more benign example, when Josh Smith got drafted by the Hawks, I was like, oh, I think you might want to get away from your partners. I don't know if they're going to help you as 18-year-old basketball player in that way. And then you saw, you know, what it was with Josh. He never turned into what he was going to be, but that's just what he was going to be as a basketball player. I wondered this about Hernandez, because Bristol is so close to Boston and he'd be around all the same people, except he was acting up at Florida too.
Yeah, I think the problem for Aaron was not, was it, the problem was Alexander Bradley. His other friends weren't that big of a deal. He became friends with Bradley as he was preparing for the draft. But it just seemed like that was the guy where it all went downhill. I mean, you look at the other kids he knew as you know, and Ortiz and Wallace he brought in because he needed someone to be basically be his bodyguard. But for the most part, you know, I will say this, like, I don't think it's a good idea for any 20-year-old with million, you know, athlete from any background to ever be in their hometown. Like, I can only imagine what a disaster that would have been for me. You know, like, it'd be better to just get away. But at the same time, I think he would have been better off going to UConn than Florida. Because at UConn, I think his dad knew. His dad was like, I got your older brother who's got his life together. He's up there. And you're going to be the biggest deal at the program, so you're going to kind of run things. And you're close enough to me that I can keep an eye on you. And UConn's football is good enough. You're going to get – I mean, he's getting drafted. He probably would have gotten drafted higher because he wouldn't have gotten in so much trouble at Florida that he dropped to the fourth round. And instead he goes to Florida. He doesn't have his dad anymore. His brother's not around. And he's thrown into this mega competitive program where he's got to prove himself. Like, if I don't deliver, I'm going to get benched. Like, you know, they'll get another tight end. And I've got to, like, fit in socially with all these people. And so I got to be, like, the biggest, wildest guy. And, I almost feel like he would have been better off staying close to home for college and then far away for the pros. That said, you know, is that the string that changes it? Maybe. Maybe not, though. You know, there's so many different things.
And an auxiliary story to this that I'm curious about is his brother, DJ Hernandez, because I Googled him. I just saw something where he had left coaching. He had been a coach. He'd been a high school coach and then was working at a college. And then he left. And I imagine, man, it's a little tricky going in to recruit people where they're like, where do I know you from?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it was a looks just like him. Yeah. He's done a good job of dealing with this. You know, I mean, it's one of the people that innocent, you know, nothing to do with this. And his life's, you know, affected in major ways by Aaron.
Now, in doing this, another major part of this documentary is Aaron Hernandez and his sexuality. It's a big part of it. And for me, I think it was interesting because I'd heard it. Like, I watched the Teddy Pendergrass documentary on Showtime not too long ago, which is really, really good. And I'd always heard this rumor that Teddy Pendergrass, when he was paralyzed in his car accident, was with someone, a transgender woman in the car. But I figured it was just a rumor, right? Because, you know, these kinds of stories just float around. And then I watched the documentary and found out, oh, that is exactly what happened. I had no idea. I just thought that that was something that people were throwing out there. And with Hernandez, I'd heard all kinds of different whispers about things related to his sexuality, but it just seemed like it was the salacious stuff that people come up with. And then I watched the documentary and I say, oh, no, this is a player in the story.
It had come out over the last, you know, there were rumors during the trials and stuff, but, you know, there are rumors and it's a sensitive subject. And how do you know? How do you know two people had a relationship? I mean, you can say anything you want. Who knows? So after his death, I mean, you have his lawyers talking about it. His brother puts out a book. More friends came forward. It's not just the one guy in there. And so, and you know, I think his lawyers talk about it at the end. That gets mentioned a lot. I thought what we really wanted to do was, and I'm glad they did. I didn't really work on this part of the documentary, so I can't take any credit for it, but add perspective, right? It's not just like, let's just throw this thing out there. I thought the Ryan O'Callaghan stuff was really a fascinating perspective, that his whole story of what it's like being closeted in the NFL and football, and how he basically thought, I'm going to kill myself at the end of my career, and how I'm going to gain as much weight as possible so nobody thinks, why aren't you with a girl? They just look at me and go, oh, he's such a slob. What girl would date him, even if he's in the NFL? And that whole process. So I thought the perspective on that, and I kind of, you know, very little positives can come from this whole story, but I'm guessing that, you know, some people watched because it was a football documentary or something and had their opinion changed. Maybe their coach, maybe their dad, or maybe a dad and a son had a conversation that wasn't going to happen some other way. I just found that whole part to be really very powerful in that story. So, you know, it not being able to be yourself, I guess it goes back to when we talked about, you know, Odin Lloyd being rich and Aaron Hernandez being poor. You know, if you are taught to hate yourself, you know, what role does that play on a daily basis? You know, or if you think if I admit who I am, all these people cheering for me are going to boo on me, or my friends aren't going to like me, or I'm going to lose my job. What weight does that put on it? Is that why? No more than any other reason could have been why. But I think it's part of who Aaron Hernandez was. It's what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I thought it was handled very well because, I mean, I imagine the margins are very thin on how you go about handling something like that. And I thought it really came through as, nah, this is something that you got to think of, especially considering the timing of his death.
Yeah, we're not just trying to throw out something salacious here. You know, it's like, and you know what? Even if it wasn't a factor, it's a story about more than just Aaron Hernandez. I mean, it's a story about football. It's a story about crime. It's a story about betrayals. It's a story about loyalties. It's a story about family. I mean, there's so many different things. I think that's, you're trying to hit a huge audience, a diverse audience of not just global, but diverse interests, right? There's something there for everyone. Like my favorite, I love the football part, right? I would have been fine if we did another 30 minutes on what the 08 Gators were like.
Oh, I'm here for it.
Right. You know, like, or, you know, exactly what Belichick saw in the Gronk, that offense, right? I mean, but that's me. I'm a football fan. So you're trying to get a little bit for everybody when you're dealing with Netflix. It's just such a massive audience.
Yeah, the 08 Gators, the Urban Meyer Chronicles. I have
the 10 Gators. Yeah, that'd be something else.
I have so many questions on this. And then, of course, Urban and his close relationship with Aaron Hernandez, where they're at his house reading the Bible as he's, you know, a recognition that this guy was troubled. But again, in fairness to Urban, I don't know how much of this he was supposed to like fully know. And I really don't know like what happened at that club in Gainesville, for example. You could say that the coach knows everything, but they also probably try not to tell him.
Yeah, well, of course. What do you think they're going to tell him the truth? and you know, the one thing for Aaron is he, football-wise, he took care of business. You know, and the number one proof that the Patriots really didn't know is that Belichick gave him a $40 million contract.
Right.
He was on a rookie deal, and he was the biggest bargain in the NFL. He was a fourth-round draft pick. So he's getting $500,000 a year. That's his salary, which is great money, but not in NFL terms. Not for a guy who is redoing your offense and helps you get to a Super Bowl. And they give him a $40 million contract. Now, you can say anything you want about Bill Belichick, but he is not going to make a commitment like that that could impact his team and his salary cap flexibility. Just bottom line, if he doesn't believe this guy is going to deliver on that contract. Like, you know, so it's like people are like, well, Belichick, he knew he was risk. He didn't know when he gave him the contract. He never would have given him the contract. He would have traded him. Now, if Belichick had shipped him off and gotten two first-round picks, then you could go, Belichick knew. But the fact he's like, no, this is it. We're going Gronk, Hernandez. We're going to win a bunch of Super Bowls. I always think that's the best tell that Belichick had no idea.
And it's wild in retrospect, when that draft came around, I bet if you asked the Patriots what was the bigger risk, it was Gronk and his body. Right? They're like, this dude smoked a little bit too much weed. Oh, yeah, we can work that out. If he can stay sober for that 1 month before the test, we're good.
Gronk was the partier.
Yep.
Right? Gronk was the one. Oh, that guy, he's partying all the time. Well, yeah. So you just don't know.
No, man. So with this story, like, what do you think was for you and all this time that you spent looking into this? Is there anything just really in particular that stands out to you that you feel like you learned, like, about the world even in observing Aaron Hernandez?
The reminder of stuff. I don't necessarily know if I learned it. I mean, I think some of the stuff, like you said, with Mike Massey, you know, who's rich and who's poor, or you don't know what's going on inside of a family, or, you know, because you look at Aaron's family, you know, one of the things we wanted to get across, because part of it was Urban Meyer always spreading, kind of putting this, but like, you assume this guy is from he couldn't shake a street gang he was in as a kid, or the neighborhood's just crime and, you know, all that. Like, Bristol's a nice place. I mean, it's not, you work there. I mean, you've been there.
Yeah.
It's not the nicest, you know, this isn't Beverly Hills, but it's a nice town. You know, the school's good. Adrian Wojnarowski went to Bristol Central.
Yes.
You know, like, it, you know, he had a house with a white fence in the front and the basketball net. And I assume people driving by looking in, and, you know, there's dad who went to college, UConn, and playing ball with his basketball with his two kids. He'd make them run sprints training them, you know, and you go, God, this is kind of idyllic, right? This is unbelievable. And you don't know, you know? So that house wasn't good for him, or what, you know, you just don't know. And we'll never know these athletes as much as we want to, or we think we do. There's just no way to know what people are going through, what they're hiding, and all of that. And the more you can take that into perspective on things and not judge one way or the other, not just negative, but don't sit there and go, oh, this guy's got it all. Aaron had it all, but he didn't have much, really.
Yeah, I imagine that there is a rough and tumble Bristol, but it ain't off Highway 72, brother. It is, yeah. It is not off any of the roads that I travel when I come up there.
Tanya Singleton's house, and yeah, there's some, but this is not what the perspective was like. Oh, when he went home, it was all trouble. It's like, you know, not that bad of a town.
Like, I've seen some things in my life. This is not necessarily real.
It's not the mean streets of Bristol. It's like, yeah.
I tell you all this, right, though, I would, you know, Boston is interesting because the mean streets of Boston people know, but they really associate it with white people, you know, like the Departed, right, type stuff. That's what they know. I actually found this interesting also because I don't know much about Black Boston. I might have some assumptions, but I did not know much. And this is not the entirety of Black Boston, obviously, but it was like, wow, you know, this is a story that isn't very often told.
No, you're right. It's all about South Boston and Charlestown, and not about Roxbury and Mattapan and Fields Corner and Dorchester and stuff like that. And that, you know, or even the Dorchester can be very racially diverse, but it's, yeah, you know, one of those, there's a little bit of the, you know, one side of the street and the other side of the street.
Right.
Yeah, no, there's more Boston than Whitey Bulger. No question about that. And so that's the one that Odin grew up in. That's the one Mike Massey grew up in.
I tell you this, I found out that Bill O'Brien was from Dorchester, and I was like, wait, I'm confused. I thought this Dorchester thing worked a different way. My fault.
Dorchester. I thought he went to St. John's Prep. Those guys usually go north of the city.
Yeah, he might have. Like I say, I just happened to see it on his wiki page where it said he was born in Dorchester, and I knew Dorchester is one of the places in Boston that black people lived. And I was like, huh, really? Maybe there's more going on. And then I looked more and was like, oh, a lot more Dorchester than I knew. Sorry about
there's
that.
A lot of Dorchester. A big area. A lot of different people.
Learned a lot. Dan Wetzel, check him out. Yahoo Sports. Also, check out Killer Inside, documentary you can find on Netflix about Aaron Hernandez. That is great work. And as usual, you are doing great work. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Thanks, man. Always good to chat with you.
Thank you, man. I'm sure the NCAA will do something we can talk about soon.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thanks to our sponsors, My Computer Career and ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to our guest, Dan Wetzel. Check out Killer Inside, a documentary on Aaron Hernandez. Check that out on Netflix. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you're a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.